Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, we've seen videos of patients lying on hospital floors, and we've read all the accounts, the anonymous testimony of healthcare workers who are struggling with a shortage of staff, oxygen supply and medication. It seems that hospitals in the Klang Valley are buckling under the surge of COVID-19 cases. But could this crisis have been anticipated, planned for, or even avoided? And what immediate actions are needed to get the situation under control? Well, we will explore tonight, and joining us first on the show, we have consultant infectious disease physician, Dr. Christopher Lee, who's previously the Deputy Director General of Health for Research and Technical Support. Dr. Lee, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight.
Hi, good evening, Melissa.
Yes, good evening. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Begin
our conversation tonight, Dr. Lee, by perhaps you assessing the situation, telling us what you think has gone wrong that now we have some public hospitals completely overwhelmed.
We have seen the images. I think we know it's pretty bad. And I think the Ministry of Health and the government has acknowledged it as well. That's why we are in the EMCO now in the central region of the country. So we know it's bad. I mean, ICUs are full. We are ventilating patients in the emergency department, which is, of course, not ideal. The waiting time to get a bed has gone longer and longer. So clearly, and the number of deaths will also increase as more and more patients are waiting to come into ICU, being very ill. And as we expand ourselves, stretch the human resource factor, clearly, I think it's not rocket science to understand that the quality of care may also drop. That will also add to the deaths. Hopefully not in a big way, but yes, it will impact on that as well. And as the Ministry of Health has said, and sometimes the doctors on the ground may have to prioritize who has a better chance of survival and who may have not such a good chance of survival. These are decisions doctors hate to make, but sometimes in dire situations, we have to make such difficult choices. So it's bad. Question.
Christopher, we know this is an unfolding crisis globally and Malaysia as well, but it's been more than a year since the crisis broke out. Could this have been anticipated? Could we have planned for more capacity? Or is that just a kind of unfair criticism of the people who are managing this crisis?
Well, to be fair, I think the Ministry of Health did plan for this. Clearly, they underestimated, I think all of us did to a certain degree, underestimated how bad the surge would be. I think is up to last year, before September, October, I think we have prepared. During the lull, there were some preparations. Sungai Buloh's facilities have been bolstered. Some of the other hospitals has also been built up the capacity. But clearly, no way in keeping with the surge we are seeing now. This surge is really, I think, caught country by surprise. There's no question. There's no denial. If not, we won't be seeing the images we are seeing now. No question. Right. So could we have planned better? Yes, I think we could have planned better, clearly. Could we have planned? Of course, we had plan A. We needed a plan B. We probably needed a plan C as well. Because if the surge continues to increase, where else do we go? Now we are building capacity as we deal with the pandemic. And in that situation, of course, we make very rushed decisions and rushed policies. And of course, these things may not work out so well. Yes, Melissa.
Right. So when you said that, you know, there was some planning, but perhaps underestimated the surge, I'm trying to understand what has changed with the nature of the disease. Is it just the number of cases that we're seeing, or is it the severity of cases? What did we not anticipate the severity and the overrun ICUs and the like?
Yeah. Number one, I think clearly the surge, the huge numbers we are seeing, I think, caught everyone by surprise. I mean, in Sungai Buloh, where I still pop into to help out, we did expand ourselves to the max, but it did caught us by surprise as well. And that's why more and more of the other hospitals in the Klang Valley had brought into play. But you're right as well. I think the pattern of disease has slightly changed. Certainly, we are seeing more and more younger patients getting seriously ill as well. Good thing is the vaccines work, and we know that just like overseas, most of the people who are seriously ill now in our ICUs, at least in the one square below, most of them, I think, from what I hear from my ID colleagues, they tend to be not fully vaccinated yet. Even some of the older folks, maybe they've had their first shot, second shot, maybe just got their second shot, but many have not been vaccinated yet. So clearly, I think, as we are talking now, as vaccination is being ramped up, that is the hope that we have, that if we buy enough time, get more and more people in the Klang Valley or the greater Klang Valley vaccinated, more and more of them will be protected. And with that, less people will be seriously ill, therefore will take pressure off our ICUs now. So we have to get ourselves over this this difficult period. I think it will probably last for a few more weeks.
Christopher, do you think this speaks to some of the failures of the vaccination program, that especially with the AstraZeneca carve-out, many young, healthy people got their shots ahead of older, people in high-risk groups? Do you think that we're paying the price for not working concertedly on phase two that was for older and high-risk patients? Individuals.
Well, in hindsight, you might say, if we had preserved all the first round of AstraZeneca shots to the older people as initially planned, of course, then we could have protected more older folks. But in hindsight, yeah, that may be a better way to go. But I would say, you know, in hindsight, everybody's vision is 2020. During that time, I think we were aware, and that's a fact, that when the concerns of AstraZeneca came out about clots, a lot of people, once they heard that AstraZeneca was going into our national program of PICK, PIC, apparently there were a lot of people who withdrew themselves on the MySejahtera registration. And I think the folks there probably saw that, and that was a judgment call on their part. I guess you can argue now whether that was wise, but at that point in time, I guess, and not trying to defend people who made that decision, but I could understand why they did it. So instead of putting it in PIC and affected the whole MySejahtera registration, they said, okay, let those who are willing to come go for it. Maybe perhaps now we could have stressed it. Even we open up for the others, perhaps we urge more older people to come forward, because, you know, and we know it was safer for older people compared to the younger folks anyway. So, you know, but I think
Dr. Lee, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. And I just want to ask you, you know, the government has announced plans to increase bed capacity, manpower, outsource some COVID patients to private hospitals. I'm wondering, do you think that's going to be enough? And will the help come fast enough to help our overwhelmed healthcare frontliners?
Well, I think currently hearing what we are hearing and seeing what we are seeing now on the ground, clearly the help could have been much faster, needed to be much faster. But I think the reinforcements are coming the way. I know for a fact that people from the less affected states are coming in. We are pushing more non-COVID care into the private hospitals. Could we have done it earlier? Perhaps, whatever, they are doing it now. But the numbers need to be bigger so that wait in ICU, wait in the emergency for ventilation from ICU bed. With the MCO going on and being a tighter MCO now, we hope in the coming weeks the number of cases will drop. At the same time, vaccination gets ramped up, more and more folks get vaccinated. So during this short period of time, this could be a couple of weeks, unfortunately, we have to stay firm, you know, and bring everybody on board. But the private hospitals, the teaching hospitals, the army hospitals, I think it's all hands on deck basically now.
Okay. Well, that was consultant infectious diseases physician, Dr. Christopher Lee. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but more on this topic in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned.
Untuk semua, percayai rakyat Malaysia. Kenapa semua orang buat webinar ni? Because it's awesome and powerful. Astro OneLink ialah nama baru untuk memperkasakan diri anda. Learn things that could help you live a better life. Interact and network with like-minded people. Menerusi digital, kolaborasi boleh terjalin di mana-mana sahaja. Great solutions that suit you, meanings that enrich you. Dengan pengalaman dan credibility kami, webinar di Astro Awani Link menyatukan anda dengan our experts, your heroes. Platformnya, Astro Awani Link.
News is a constant. Whatever the time, wherever you are, it will reach you. What's key are its credibility and accuracy. Without bias, with context covering all angles. This is what you'll get on Awani Tonight. We'll brief you the news and views of the day that matter, all in 15 minutes. Weekdays at 9:45 p.m. only on Astro Awani.
Hi, you're watching Consider This with me, Melissa Idris, and Sharad Kutan. Dr. Michael Jayakumar-Devaraj is the chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. PSM is the founding member of the People's Health Forum, which champions healthcare as a human right. Dr. Jayakumar, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Now, we're speaking to you tonight to perhaps tap on your experience as 19 years as a doctor with the Ministry of Health. And I'm wondering, in your assessment of what's happened in the past days and weeks, for the what is the reason, you think, for the current crisis in public hospitals?
Well, I think the current crisis is because the number of cases per day, new cases per day, is now phenomenally high in the Klang Valley. You know, for the last 5 days, it's about 5,000 and over, you know, 5,000 plus cases per day, new cases. And what basically happens, Melissa, is that about 20% of these cases go on to require oxygen. They require oxygen therapy to pull through. That means 20% of 5,000 plus is more than 1,000 cases require admission to hospitals for treatment, you know, for not only oxygen, but by that time, you know, these people are the people who have immunological reaction. Their body's immune system goes berserk. It attacks normal organs. It causes a clotting problem. So you've got to catch them early when they go into the space. You've got to catch them early, give them steroids, kind of cut down the immune system. At the same time, you've got to give them anticoagulants, and you've got to monitor them closely. And they'll take about a week or maybe even 2 weeks. So can you imagine this? You have 1,000 new cases coming in per day, and they need to stay a week to 2 weeks. So, of course, you're going to get overload of the system.
Kumar, looking around the world, we've seen other countries deal with surges, with their hospitals overwhelmed. Do you think we have here in Malaysia the capacity to learn from those experiences and could have put those into practice, or at least in anticipating the very real possibility of such a huge surge?
I think we are caught a bit off guard from what we can see, what's happening in the public hospitals in the Klang Valley. I think they are overflowing. And when you have a situation like that, obviously you're going to miss out. Because the crux in this is when they deteriorate from Category 3, which is pneumonia, you know, COVID with pneumonia, to Category 4 is when they need supplemental oxygen. You've got to catch them at that period. And you have a window of opportunity for 2-3 days, where if you start the right treatment, it won't go to the next stage, which is multi-organ damage because of the blood clots, you know, the abnormal clotting going and bashing up your kidneys and bashing up your heart and bashing up your brain. You know, you can avoid that, avert that, if you start treatment early. But when you're overloaded, you can't do that. So I think they've opened up extra places, you know, lower care centers, in convention centers, in stadiums. They've done all that. But I think they didn't anticipate that there'll be such a large surge. They're getting more than 1,000 new cases, which are Category 4, which need oxygen, which need inpatient treatment.
Dr. Kumar, the People's Health Forum, they've called on the government to take specific measures to alleviate the overload or the stretched healthcare system. And I'm just wondering, in among the suggestions that the People's Health Forum have put forth, how quickly is can you ramp up capacity? I'm wondering because infrastructure and training and manpower, all of that takes time, but the system is under immense strain right now. Are the suggestions able to be implemented immediately?
Of course you can. See, because, okay, we got to think of what do we need, all right? Let's say the patients at category 1 and 2 would be about 60% of all patients. And 1 is no symptoms, 2 is just symptoms, but no pneumonia. And this needs to be monitored at home, you know? We've got to make sure that they get enough food, enough basic supplies, and make sure they don't come out of their houses because then they'll transmit to other people. So for them, we need to just follow up on phone. So whether our COVID assessment centers can actually set up a group of volunteers to call these people every day and find out, you know, what is going on and just help them, you know, advise them what to do. You know, so that is one. You know, and you've got to supply food. Now, category 3, where they are getting some symptoms and a bit of shortness of breath and pneumonia, they just need, even in schools, can use school halls, for example, put them there and just monitor them more closely. It's only category 4 that needs to go to hospital, right? So you can open up schools, for example. There's so many schools in Selangor and schools are not being used. Open up the school, get the beds in, get a staff in. If you need to mobilize staff from other states, mobilize staff from the private sector, ask Singapore for help. You know, I think we can't be, look at our dignity, la marwa, too much, you know. I think here we've got to try and save people. And we can save them. The trick is catching the deterioration early and starting treatment before organs get damaged. And you have about 48 hours to do that.
Right, Kumar, if I could ask this very quickly, because you talk about early intervention, and in other countries, it means oximeters at home, it means, you know, all the things that are necessary for people to monitor and therefore get the help that they need. Do we have that? We haven't ramped up self-testing kits. We haven't ramped up the use of oximeters. Is that a blind spot because we're so focused on vaccination?
Well, I guess vaccine, you know, if we have an oximeter, it would help, you know. Oximeter also gives you the pulse rate. But you can still, you know, if you're doing a phone call conversation, you can ask them, when you walk around, are you breathless, you know, the house. You can still use that. You can ask them to check your own pulse and count for over a minute. You can do things, you know. So that doesn't need to be the hospital staff, you know. You can get a pool of volunteers, retired doctors, nurses, dentists, and even ordinary people can just call up and screen them. Basically, if it's just virology, you know, there's a virus phase, in a week it's over. So anything that lasts more than a week, you're suspicious that the immunological system has kicked in with the overreaction. You know, so you can actually, of course, oximeters will help, but without oximeters, you can still, by basis of symptoms and basis of history, you can still screen. So that could be done.
Dr. Kumar, thank you so much for your time. That was Dr. Michael J. Kumar Devaraj of PSM. Another quick break here on Consider This, but stay tuned. We have more on this topic. Don't go anywhere.
Peranti yang jenis macam mana kalau nak beli untuk murid-murid sekolah di luar sana?
Cuba kaitkan hari itu dengan umur model tersebut.
Banyak pihak boleh memainkan peranan untuk membantu menyedari mengenai program vaksinasi.
Usaha ini memerlukan pelbagai ini kementerian.
Sebuah jawatankuasa dibentuk untuk meneliti aspek-aspek penting sebelum persidangan parlimen diadakan.
Hi, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. But if you've just joined us tonight, we're discussing the current situation in which public hospitals, particularly in the Klang Valley, are buckling under the strain of the current load of COVID-19 cases. Azra Mohamad Khalib is the chief executive of the Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy, which is an independent policy research and advocacy organisation. He joins us now. Azra, good evening. Now, we understand the high number of cases that are being logged in every day, but I'm just wondering whether the current crisis now of overloaded healthcare systems, particularly in the Klang Valley, could that have been anticipated and planned for better?
Well, you know, what's happened right now is simply this. The number of people who are positive for COVID-19 and needing to be hospitalized for critical care has exceeded the capacity and capability of the affected healthcare facilities to provide the necessary treatment and care. So it can and has happened regardless of how good the healthcare system is. And we saw this happening last year and this year in Italy, New York, the United Kingdom, India, and now, despite all valiant efforts, also occurred here in Malaysia. You know, in some parts of Malaysia's healthcare system, you know, the word crisis and overwhelmed seem like euphemisms. We have doctors, nurses, hospital assistants, cleaners in many of the hospitals located in the Klang Valley, such as Klang, Sungai Buloh and KL. They are exhausted and burned out. Not all of them have received their vaccine jabs. Some of them are getting infected despite protection. Medicines are running out. There have been equipment shortages such as ventilators and oxygen concentrators. Oxygen tanks are in high demand. Patients are slumped on waiting room benches sharing capillaries of oxygen tubing. So it sounds very familiar, doesn't it? But the thing is, whether or not we were able to prepare enough for it, the reality is that the scale of this pandemic has taxed every single country, even the most prepared ones.
Azra, okay, I think that's, you know, I think a very fair comment. But when it comes to, say, protecting our frontliners, and that was always, you know, the task of the first phase, the fact that many frontliners, or some frontliners, as you suggest, are still not vaccinated is shocking, isn't it?
I mean, it certainly is. I mean, they were prioritized, but the reality is that there was a prioritization that was being done, and it didn't get to everyone that needed to be vaccinated. And I think that's being remedied right now, but there are still people being left out.
Right. Azra, can I ask you, a lot of focus on the overwhelmed ICU and frontliners. And I'm just wondering, because hospitals are struggling so much, has there been an impact to non-COVID patients? I'm thinking about, you know, stretched healthcare resources perhaps affecting non-COVID patients, those who need ICU care, those who require admission, are stuck in emergency departments because of the backlog. How are you seeing the spillover or the domino effect of the current situation?
Well, there's been a lot of deferment. There's a lot of postponement. There's a lot of frustration because a lot of the kind of procedures that would normally be done in public healthcare systems, such as for cancer, have been deferred or having to be shunted or delegated to private hospitals who are having to take on the caseload of those that would normally be in public hospitals. So there's a lot of decanting of the public hospitals to the private hospitals in order to make way for COVID patients. So right now, what we're seeing is that beds are being prioritized for the purposes of treating COVID-19 patients. And most of the private sector hospitals that are being involved in taking care of the procedures, the operations, the outpatient care that's needed are themselves overstretched.
Azra, when you read these reports, and one of them, you know, and they mention a lack of medication, does that surprise you, considering medication is something that is essentially to do with procurement, and that could have been done months or ahead of time? Do you understand what's happening on that front?
Well, definitely. I mean, one of the things that we've heard quite a lot of it is that people who are treating COVID-19 patients, especially in categories 4 and 5, and even 3, are running out of things like steroids, for example, that are being used to treat patients at that particular stage. But here's the thing, you know, we have to remember that there's been decades of underfunding of public health in Malaysia that we've experienced, you know, and it's sobering to remember that just before COVID-19 kicked off Malaysia in late January 2020, just the year before, the Auditor General's report had actually declared that our healthcare system was understaffed, overcrowded, underfunded, insufficiently equipped to provide proper levels of care, that there was a shortage of funds meant that our public hospitals were unable to properly replace and procure new equipment and new medication. It also meant that the system was also hemorrhaging young doctors, specialists, and allied health workers who were unable to be retained due to limited funds. So, you know, the problem that we've been hearing about contract healthcare workers today, for example, is actually rooted in these systemic problems. And today, when we're talking about the kind of shortage of medication that's happening right now, it's also due to the fact that we started off in a very, inadequate position, and we are now paying for that.
Azrul, so then what immediate action would you like to see? I mean, I understand the need to, increase funding or funnel more resource allocation into the healthcare system, perhaps in the future, in the coming years, for us to prepare better. But in terms of immediate action, what would you like to see from decision makers today?
Well, you know, we are where we are today, you know, because of the defensive attitude of previous governments, of the leadership, of the civil service, and the general public's lack of interest in health in the past have made this problem of talking about reforms in healthcare financing extremely frustrating. People want and feel entitled to cheap healthcare, but don't really want to think about how the government should pay for it. And healthcare, after all, doesn't really cost one ringgit. But if you're asking me what immediate action I want to see from decision makers, I think the first and foremost that we need to drop is the gag order on people working the public health system, especially under the Ministry of Health. It's incredibly unhelpful and works against getting public support, understanding and empathy. This gag order needs to be removed. Healthcare workers are forced to send letters to the editor, speak anonymously, and hide their identities as if they were doing something wrong to get their stories out and to express their frustration and cries for help. They are not doing anything wrong. And our doctors, nurses, allied health workers, and even hospital cleaners should be encouraged to speak of their struggle, pain, and sacrifice.
We're running out of time.
To speak up.
Yeah, I understand. I appreciate what you're saying. There's another dimension to that, also about information, but data. The unwillingness, it seems, by officials to share data more broadly so better solutions can be thought of, the refusal to share data between federal and state authorities, sometimes bordering on the vindictive. How do we resolve that?
Well, we've got to drop this defensive attitude. We are all in it together. We are on the same team. You can't be treating states and federal as if we were in competing objectives to one another. And we need to be able to share that data. It's data is pointless if you can't share and make use of it, especially when it comes to decision making at the policy level. So I really call for all of us, especially for the federal government, to share as much data as they can, even if the data is unfavorable or it looks bad, because only with honesty and sincerity can we work to getting out of this pandemic. If we're not willing to trust each other and to be able to work together, then what are we doing this for? You know, we have to support each other, especially those who have been sacrificing so much.
Well said, Azrul. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Azrul Mohamad Khalid there from the Galen Centre joining us on the show. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Alyssa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching the show tonight. Good night.